let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello, and welcome back to Let's Talk About and episode 11 of the Tech Talk miniseries. It just continues on and on because I found even more stuff to talk about, even more technology to talk about. And this is going to continue on with the kind of general theme within the theme of this miniseries, where I'm talking about technological solutions that will help us move forward in the age of climate change, looking at technological innovations that will change how we generate energy, heat our homes, the materials we make products out of, and remove carbon from our atmosphere. And these are amazing technological achievements. And something that I've talked about in previous episodes is energy storage. One of the ways in which we are grappling with climate change is how do we generate power, generate energy to be used, generate electricity, and how do we move that around? Because in certain areas, the infrastructure for, say, wind and solar, geothermal isn't built yet. And if we are going to transition off of fossil fuels and, you know, gasoline fire power plants, coal fire power plants, we're going to need to replace them with something as we wind down that technology. And if it's going to take a long time to, you know, how can we create an infrastructure that doesn't require, you know, as much of, you know, land to be used for solar farms or wind farms or, you know, digging out for geothermal? How are we going to create technology or create an infrastructure that can still get power to those areas? Say you live in a community, say you live in, I don't know, Aspen, Colorado, it's in the mountains, you don't have a lot of flat usable land, it's a lot of the nature around in Colorado is protected because there's lots of state parks, lots of national parks, it's a beautiful area and it's a great carbon sink that you don't want to disrupt with building, you know, wind, you know, turbines and solar fields and things like that. How do you power something like that, you know, aside from obviously hydro, which is a major boon for Colorado? How would you, in a situation like that, provide power? Well, one way that scientists have been grappling with is, can we generate power in one place far away, store that energy and transfer it over there, basically ship large batteries to power some remote areas or to areas where the infrastructure, the green infrastructure, does not exist in large enough numbers yet? And that is where Polar Night Energy comes in. So one of the amazing things about say Manitoba Hydro, is that, as I mentioned on previous episodes, we produce more energy than is needed by the province of Manitoba. So we sell that off for profit. But what if we could store that energy? What if we could store it and keep it for a rainy day when we need it, or for a time where we can't generate as much power from something like our hydroelectric dams? Well, this is something that Polar Night Energy is trying to solve. So this is taken directly from the website. Quote, our novel solution enables the upscaling of solar and or wind energy to up to 100% of your heating and electricity demand. The core of our solution is our patented high-temperature, large-scale heat storage. We convert electricity to heat and store it for later use. We use sand as the storage medium, which leads to safe operation and a natural balance in the storage cycle. Additionally, sand is a cheap and abundant material that can be heated up to 1,000 degrees Celsius and even higher. Inside the sand, we built our heat transfer system that enables effective energy transportation to and from the storage. Proper insulation between the storage and the environment ensures a long storing period up to months with minimal heat loss. The size of our storage varies from tens to thousands of cubic meters. It is possible to locate the storage underground, reserving minimal space for the often highly valuable square meters in construction sites. Now, this may seem kind of complicated, but I'm going to try and break it down for you in a kind of a clear, consistent way. First off, when you're walking on the beach on a sunny day, when you're listening to this, you're just coming out of a long weekend. A lot of you might have gone out to the lake, gone to the beach, got some sun, went swimming. And you notice, and a lot of people notice, how hot the sand gets. You're walking and it's burning your feet. Some people walk in the water. Sand, as it is an excellent insulator. And what I mean by that is it is able to store and contain a large amount of heat. Heat doesn't penetrate through very well. It hits the sand, refracts it off, and then it gets dispersed into the granules of sand. That light energy comes as heat, or that light energy hits the sand and transfers to heat energy that disperses within the sand and is held there and slowly wicks off over time. The heat loss that was mentioned in this this piece by Polar Night Energy. So heat, as you probably know, is energy. It is atoms moving around very, very fast. You energize something, it starts to move very fast, and that gives off heat. So what Polar Night Energy is doing is they're building these large storage systems of sand. And sand, it does get up to 1,000 degrees Celsius, because 1,000 degrees Celsius is around the temperature needed to convert sand to glass. Yes, glass comes from sand. You melt it down and it turns to glass. But you need to heat it up extremely high for the sand to actually melt. These little mineral grains of stone, that is sand. So what they do is they take the energy generated from wind, wind turbines or solar panels, and they feed that directly into this, I guess you could say, a battery that is filled with sand and it is well insulated. So it injects it and starts to heat up this container, and that heat is held within the sand. So you can put the sand in there and you have it in this insulated unit, this insulated material, because sand, it can lose its heat rather quickly, but if you properly insulate it, the heat loss that they're talking about is basically, the energy being lost just gradually as the heat disperses out of an object and it cools down, because everything will be brought down to just kind of room temperature or air temperature if you leave it there long enough. It will wick off all the heat. So if you properly insulate this battery with, a certain material, that heat can remain trapped inside this insulated sand. So sand itself, an insulator, will keep that energy, that heat energy, that can then be converted and transferred out into something else. So say you know, for instance, you live in Alaska. You live in Northern Canada, where for part of the year, you have 24 hours of darkness. If you are going to have a green solution to energy, solar will be great for half the year. It will be great to have solar energy because it's going to be constantly sunny, there will be UV radiation 24/7 because you're getting 24/7 sunlight. Even if it's coming through clouds, even if it's, you know, indoors, you're still getting some level of UV radiation coming in because the sun is facing that part of the world. So you're heating up these solar panels 24/7 with more energy than can be effectively used by your communities in Alaska, in Nunavut, in Northwest Territories, in Yukon. So you need somewhere to put that energy. You can either use the Manitoba model, where you inject that electricity into the grid and you send it off to a different area, either a different territory, a different province, and you make money off of that. Or you can use something like this polar night energy, and you can store that electricity as heat energy in a bunch of these cells, which is a really, really cool concept because it allows us to create green alternatives to batteries. Right now, you can have, you know, most of you are probably thinking, oh, well, we have rechargeable batteries. I can, you know, plug my phone in right now and charge it. I can, you know, plug in my Xbox controller or my PlayStation controller. I can plug in my headphones and they will recharge because they have internal batteries that are rechargeable. And yes, you plug that in and the electrical energy forces the electrons from one side of the battery to the other and charges them up again. However, batteries are one of the largest contributors to pollution in the world. They are made from acids. They are made from precious metals. You require materials to be mined to make batteries. Like, do you actually know what a battery is made of? The major one, and the kind of the best batteries in the world right now are lithium batteries. And there is an estimated 14 million tons of lithium in the world. But lithium doesn't just sit on the surface. You need to create lithium mines. You need to dig down, and that releases carbon into the atmosphere, that displaces ecosystems, that costs a lot of money, that brings in a lot of extra pollution to mine that lithium to make those batteries. Even beyond that, you need to get zinc, you need magnesium, you need graphite, you need potassium, you need to make steel. Like, there are a large number of components that go into making, you know, regular everyday batteries, and especially lithium batteries, which are the most popular batteries right now, that contribute heavily to pollution. And we talked last episode about how silicone is one of the largest, or two episodes ago, how silicone is one of the most abundant materials on Earth. It is very easy to make and to generate silicone to use in solar panels. I don't know if you've looked at a map recently, but there is sand literally everywhere. Sand is one of the most abundant materials on planet Earth, and it's easy to get. You need to just, you know, scoop up enough of it. You don't need to mine it. You don't need to create it somehow through a chemical process. It's just there. And with the desertification, we're going to be having more sand as time goes on. Sand is just going to be like water. It's just one of those things that we have an abundance of, that in systems like this can be taken and used and then put back into the environment when it's done. Something else to consider is the energy cost, or the emissions cost of actually constructing something like this. Because, you know, not every piece of this system that Polar Night Energy has created is entirely, you know, free from carbon emissions. You're not going to get free from carbon emissions really from any process that human beings undertake. We're always going to be, for a very long time, probably for the entirety of human history, putting carbon into the atmosphere. And it's just, how do we mitigate that? How do we neutralize that? How do we offset that in some kind of way? Well, according to Polar Night Energy, the CO2 emissions from their heat storage are entirely embedded emissions from the construction materials and the construction phase of the project. When they're actually building these systems, building these batteries, and, you know, they are able to build them underground. So when you're constructing a solar farm, or you're constructing a wind turbine, underneath it, you can set up in construction underground a series of these sand batteries, or these sand vats that they can charge with heat energy that is stored and able to be transferred out later. So the majority or all of the CO2 emissions from this system come at the beginning from the actual construction. So the materials that they require, the materials that are made, and the actual construction of itself with the equipment and the people and the shipping that's required and all of that. But the actual system itself as it runs is no more polluting than the system that creates or generates the power to begin with. So if you have a coal-fired power plant, yes, you are able to still utilize the solution to store energy for later. However, you are still gathering emissions and still emitting carbon into the atmosphere for that initial generation phase. It's just that later on, when the energy is transferred out of the sand batteries, that there is no emissions. There's no further emissions. So if this is used in conjunction with solar farms or wind turbines or hydroelectric dams, this can be a carbon neutral or carbon negative system. It is simply power generated through the environment. It's through solar radiation, through the movement of water, through the movement of air pushing turbines around. This is an amazing step, and it does answer a question that you always have to ask when you're looking at a solution like this. Is yes, sure, there is still, this is a great technology, this is very positive, it's a great step forward. However, what are still the carbon costs that are going to go into this? What's going to be the construction cost? What's going to be the material cost? What's going to be the operating cost of carbon that is emitted into the atmosphere? And this is, for all intents and purposes, a closed system where there is no carbon outside of what is generated to be put in to this. So then they say, and I quote, "It can be said that the heat taken from our storage is as clean as was the electricity fed into the storage." So going back to our northern example, say you build the Northwest Territories, Nunavut, and the Yukon Territory are all fairly flat. The tundra is fairly flat. You can set up a series of solar panels or wind turbines to generate, solar and wind energy. Say you do it in, you do it near Whitehorse in the Yukon, and you set up a solar farm, and for half of the year, you're getting 24/7 sunlight, and the excess power that is not used by the surrounding communities or transmitted out to those communities is stored in these carbon batteries. That power is coming at an entirely net zero carbon. There is no carbon used in that system outside of, what went into constructing those solar panels in the first place. And 20 years down the line, that's nothing. That is, you are just generating energy based off UV radiation and the small changes and tweaks and maintenance of the solar panels. So that energy is coming in clean and is being transferred to these large batteries and stored for, the time of year where you don't have 24/7 sunlight, which then can just be used and used and used and used until those stores are empty, hopefully near the time where the sun comes back and you can start generating power from solar energy. You'll probably want some backup solutions. You'll want some wind turbines. You'll want, you know, maybe a hydroelectric dam somewhere, or, you know, keep hold on to, you know, propane generators or gas generators that can be used in a pinch. But still, it is a way to create a completely closed system that is self-reliant and self-perpetuating. And they have the customer in mind. And we're always talking about, with these solutions, we're talking about scalability. So going back to their article on this, heat storage is always a part of an energy system. Would it be either a heating network or a single building, a large district heating network, or a self-contained electricity and heating system on an island? Thus, each of our heat storages are individually tailored according to the requirements and operation logic of the customer. We design both individual heat storages and full energy systems with our storage enabling high renewable fractions with reasonable costs. Our storages are designed based on simulations using COMSOL multiphysics software. We design our systems using 3D transient heat transport models and with real-life input and output data. We designed and built our first commercial sand-based heat storage, and Vatajankowski, an energy utility based in Western Finland. It will provide heat for the community's district heating network in Kankanpa, Finland. The storage has 100 kilowatt heating power and 8 megawatt per hour capacity. The full-scale utilization of the storage will begin during the year 2022, which we're in. We also have a 3 megawatt per hour running test pilot in Heidenranta, Tampere. It is connected to a local district heating grid, and it provides heat for a couple of buildings. The pilot enables testing, validation, and optimization of the heat storage solution. In the pilot, the energy is partly from a 100 square meter solar panel array and partly from the electric grid. So this is a solution that can provide power on a scale, provide power at scale. When you have individual units, it's essentially how many of those individual units do you need? When we talked about the capture technology, you talked about the Climeworks technology, talked about the CO2 rail technology from last week. It's all about scale. You want a bigger solution? Okay, you have more of these units. You want more power? You need more of these units. You want more storage? You need more of these units. And they can build individual units and build them to the size and scale that you require. This is an amazing technology, and it has an ability, and the fact that it's operating in Finland is perfect, because if you've never been to Finland before, the conditions are very similar to what Canadian winters can be like, especially here on the prairies. Very cold, quite a bit of sun, but this heat energy is able to continue to operate. If you've ever, you know, another thing that I have not mentioned yet is, say we have a battery storage system here in Winnipeg. Say you put one in your house. You have a solar array on your roof, and you have some battery storage connected to your house that stores the excess energy that you don't use for, you know, a rainy day where you might need it, or the power grid goes out, or it's not sunny enough and you're not getting enough radiation on those solar panels to actually power your house. Well, in a minus 30, minus 40 winter, there's going to be energy loss. You know, those batteries are going to be hot because they're filled with energy. They're filled with the heat energy. You've ever touched a battery that's been running for a while, or a battery that's plugged in, it gets very hot. So it wicks off and it loses. There's heat loss that comes with, even with an insulated battery. Anybody who's had a cell phone in Winnipeg knows that if you're in the cold long enough, the battery will die. The electrons will just lose charge. So you will, and they lose charge quicker because the heat energy is being sapped from them because of that heat loss. That heat loss is sped up because it's so cold. So the fact that it's operating with the sand and insulated system in Finland means amazing things for, you know, Manitoba particularly. Now, I've got a few minutes left, so I want to run through a few quick little tidbits, a few little numbers here that might be of interest to you if you're looking at this. And this isn't an ad in any way. I just found this technology and I thought it was really cool and I wanted to talk about it. But here's some interesting facts that you might want to consider. So the temperature, the sand in these batteries is heated to between 600 and 1,000 degrees Celsius. As soon as it ticks over that 1,000 degrees Celsius mark, the sand begins to melt and turn to glass. So you want to keep it below 1,000 degrees Celsius. So it powers the nominal power. It provides up to 100 megawatts per hour, or 100 megawatts of nominal power. The capacity is up to 20 gigawatts an hour to be able to charge. The storage can last from hours to months. It can be a short-term system. It can be a long-term system. The lifespan of these batteries are tens of years. They don't actually know how long this can last. And the amazing thing, there's very minimal running costs. There's nothing consumable in it. It's just sand in this vat that is in this contained system. So you just pay for the batteries themselves and the system itself, and you don't have to keep refilling it. And there's also a point where there's no poisonous or hazardous materials and minimal emissions. But the key point is that there's a minimal running cost to it. You operate, you basically, it's the running cost for, you know, checking on the the system every once in a while to make sure your batteries are running properly, and whatever the cost is for generating power, the power that's going into heating those and that's being stored, whatever you're paying for your hydroelectric, your wind or your solar, whatever it is, that's really the only cost aside from actually paying for the batteries themselves. And the fact that nothing is consumed when you use lithium batteries, that eventually that battery will not be usable anymore. Eventually the battery dies and you have to replace it. And with this system, because the way that the physics of it work, the sand will just remain sand. It does not get depleted from being used. It's just an insulated, you know, bunch of rock, essentially. It's powdered rock. That's what sand is. And it's fully automized. You don't need to be constantly monitoring and checking it. It's a system that can run on its own, which is really, really amazing. But once again, this is an amazing technology, and I'm really keeping an eye on this to see how it changes moving forward and how it's operated moving forward. I'll leave links to it in the show notes. But yeah, this is Polar Night Energy. It's really amazing technology. And they've got some videos on it, which are really, really cool. I'll leave the PNE How It Works video also in the show notes if you're interested. But yeah, this is amazing technology. It's scalable. It's green. It's tested. It's validated. It's really, really awesome. And I hope it's another one of those little incremental changes that are going to make a world of difference as we move through this post or this during climate change, climate disaster world we live in. And that'll do it for today. This has been episode 11 of the Tech Talk series here on Let's Talk About. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. Thank you very much for listening. If you're listening live on 101.5 UM FM, thank you very, very much for listening. Keep that dial to 101.5. You got some great songs and great shows coming up right after this one. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. Like, share, follow, do all of those amazing things to help this show grow. Another thing, I have been co-hosting on the hockey show with Teebs every Thursday, 5:30 to 6:30. So if you like hockey at all, we definitely have good conversations. This past week, we talked about the Hockey Canada scandal a little bit. So content warning on that one if you're going to listen. But if you're a hockey fan, if you're a fan of this show, maybe you can give it a listen, give it a try. I am going to go because as I'm recording this, I'm getting out of here for the long weekend. I'm recording this on Friday. My work gave us the afternoon off. So thank you very, very much for listening. I'm going to get out to the lake. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everyone.